Henry Hill joins me in studio. If you've seen the movie Goodfellas, you've certainly heard of Henry Hill, his life story portrayed in the movie Goodfellas, and also, of course, a book. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the books that he's written and books written about him coming up. We're glad to have you in studio.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
And your friend Denny Griffin is with you. And Denny Griffin's been in studio with me before. Nice to see you, Denny.
Thank you very much, Heidi.
Glad to have you. So now, geez, where do I start? You kind of were attracted to the mob lifestyle pretty early. I mean, as a little kid, you could see that these people were living a good life. They're dressing nice. They're treated nice. And you just didn't see going doing a 9-to-5 job as exciting enough.
Well, I mean, I worked hard as a little kid. I mean, I started washing cars and limousines for them in the cab stand and limousine service.
Right.
And I mean, you know, you see these guys, you know, with big diamond pinky rings and wads of hundreds and bimbos on one arm or two arms, you know, and it was intoxicating as a kid.
Sure.
You know? I mean, you know, I thought I was born a poor, you know, I came from a, you know, a blue collar neighborhood and, you know, my dad was a, you know, an electrician and, you know, and I mean, well, the first problem was I was dyslexic.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
You know, and they didn't know what that was as a, you know, back in those days.
So school was just a chore for you at that time.
It was. I mean, I couldn't read or write until I was, you know, much later on in life.
Interesting. So you were frustrated every day. You didn't feel like you were learning everything. You saw the kind of lifestyle they were leading, some of these guys.
And, you know, I used to get a lot of attaboys and $10 bills. And, you know, I was making as much money as my dad when I was, you know, 12, 13 years old.
Now, was your dad really as ticked off as he's portrayed in the movie when he found out you were associated with these guys and you weren't going to school and the school was sending letters home, things like that? Is that true?
Absolutely. Oh, I call more beatings.
Now, was the movie Goodfellas pretty accurate about your life?
It was 99.8%.
That's pretty good.
No, really. I mean, Scorsese did an unbelievable job. I mean, there was nothing fabricated. You know, there was so much stuff they had to take out. They took 36 minutes out of that movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What did they take out of the movie that you think?
A lot of violent stuff. You know, a lot of...
They left plenty of violence in, like the guy in the... Let's talk about the guy in the back of the trunk. I'm going to skip around, but that's all right. Let's talk about the guy in the back of the trunk. Okay, so you killed this guy because the Joe Pesci...
I didn't kill him.
Well, no, you didn't, but they... No, that's true. Did you ever kill anybody, ever? Tell the truth. Fess up time.
No, not that I know of. I mean, you know.
Not that you know of?
We had gunfights in the street. No, seriously. And I sold drugs. So I guess, you know, and I was there for.
Nobody you ever personally stuffed in a trunk is what you're telling me.
I stuffed a few people.
But you didn't kill anybody and stuff them in a trunk.
I didn't put a gun to anyone.
For somebody else. Okay. So that's a true story when you stuffed the guy in the trunk and you thought he was dead. And then was he really alive when he got to the burial ground?
Yeah. I was sitting in the back seat. Tommy was driving. And the guy is hitting. He's trying to get out of the trunk.
Oh my God!
I miss it.
I mean, you in the movie, I mean, they portray it in the movie as, you know, Ray Liotta, which of course is you, mm-hmm. saying, "What is it? Somebody had a flat, something going on." You had to know it was him.
Of course. I mean, yeah, I was sitting in the back seat, and Tommy was driving. Right. Jimmy was sitting, the other seat, and boom, boom, boom.
You knew nobody ran over anything. You knew the guy was still alive.
Of course. So did they.
That's got to be a creepy feeling to be a part of somebody's death, isn't it? Even if you're not actually the one doing it.
Very creepy and very sick and very, you know, disturbing.
But do you get to the point when you're in the mob where you I guess you kind of get, I don't want to say immune to it, but you realize that if you don't do some of these people, they're going to kill you. Is that kind of how you justify it?
Well, you couldn't. There was no way that you could show a sign of weakness. Anything you was asked to do, if you didn't do it, then you was, wow. You know, it was a sign of weakness. So you had to, you know, even if, you know, you didn't want to do it, you know, you didn't want to hit the guy in the head with a baseball bat, you know, to collect 4,000 that he owed you. Yeah, I mean, you know, the brutality and the, but you had to follow that line, you know what I mean? And you had to be part of, you know, even though I wasn't a full Italian, a made guy, I was still part of a crew. And if you showed weakness, you were going to get wild.
Well, yeah, because they knew that at that point they would know they couldn't trust you.
Exactly.
And that you might say something. So you had. Now, in the one scene where in the poker game where the Joe Pesci character, was he really as crazy as he seemed? Was he portrayed in the movie?
He was much more crazy.
So why didn't they kill him? Why didn't
they? They did eventually.
Yeah, but to me, you know, when this guy was starting problems in restaurants and all these kind of things, to me, he seemed like such a loose cannon. I'm surprised they wouldn't have killed him sooner. Just because you couldn't trust what he was going to do or who he was going to shoot.
And he was a good earner, and he was a whacker for Jimmy, and Jimmy protected him. You know, Jimmy protected him like a son. And, you know, the Nero character, you know, Tommy was insane. totally homicidal maniac, whatever. I mean, there isn't any words that, you know, you can describe. He wasn't a human being. He killed his own brother.
Mm-hmm.
He whacked his own brother.
So a guy like that, but as long as they can keep him in line, they figure, okay, maybe he's a little nuts, but as long as he's behaving and doing what we need him to do, it's okay to keep
exactly.
him alive.
You know, he come up with good scores, and, you know, he was an earner, and he, you know, he did what he had to do.
Mm-hmm. What about De Niro? Did you get to meet De Niro or anything like that on the
set? Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, of course. Not on the set, but, you know, I met him after.
Now, when they were making this movie, were you still in hiding?
Of course.
Yeah. How long have you been out of hiding?
I was kicked out of the Witness Protection Program quite a few times. The U.S. attorneys had to fly to Washington many times to, you know. I mean, you know.
Because you were getting out of line.
Well, you know, getting drunk and, you know, getting mm-hmm. stupid.
Yeah.
You know, got into drugs for a while, you know, and I don't do drugs anymore. I don't recommend anybody do drugs. Children, kids, adults. I mean, personally, I was addicted, and I'm, you know, like, fortunately, I walked away from drugs. I still like to tip a few once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a beer here and there.
Is it tough going into the witness protection program? Because now you're supposed to live kind of a normal, boring life. And if you lived a life in the mob, and, you know, the reason you're in it, partly money, but partly the excitement, it's different every day. And then you go into kind of a mundane lifestyle. Is it tough to adapt to that?
I don't think I ever went into a mundane lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know.
Doesn't sound like it.
No, for seven.
Well, if you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, Henry Hill, then maybe it is mundane, but not for you, I guess.
No, I mean, you know, for 7 years I testified, and now, you know, I would spend 3 weeks out of every month either at a neutral site, you know, being debriefed or preparing for trials. I mean, because that's what it takes, you know, and we was just from, you know, up against, you know, the best lawyers in the country.
Now the crew is submitting questions here to me because they've all seen the movie a million times and they're fascinated by this. Couple of things: there was a scene in the movie where Joe Pesci was told to go get his shine box
by Billy Batts.
By Billy Batts, who you killed later on. You didn't kill, but they killed later that night. Was that a true story?
Absolutely. You know, and they killed him in my restaurant. Between the lines, Billy had just come home from doing 6 years. And Jimmy had taken over the, Queens and Forest Hills area, the Shylock and then, loan sharking and bookmaking business. And Billy wanted it back. Right.
You know? Yeah, you've been gone 6 years. Too bad somebody else has taken your spot kind of thing. So you guys walk in, start having a conversation. The Joe Pesci character comes in with a girl. And
he was there all night. He was there all night. Mm-hmm. You know, well, Billy was there all night, coked up, drinking, with somebody else. And, you know, then Tommy walked in with Cracklin' Rosie.
Cracklin' Rosie. Do we ever see her again? That was a one-shot deal or what?
No, she lives in Arizona.
Cracklin' Rosie. All righty then. Okay.
Rosie something rather.
Was a song written about her? I'm just curious.
No.
Okay. Just checking. So he walks in with her. So you don't insult somebody in front of the girlfriend.
No. And he'd have a pistol on him.
So keep him away.
You know,
that's what Tommy said, to keep Billy Batts away from him.
No, keep Billy here till I get back.
Right, okay. And you knew there was going
to
be...
Rosie home.
Right, you knew there was going to be trouble.
Duh.
Yeah. So, but you came back, and in the movie, the Ray Liotta character, you, kind of tried to stop it. You didn't want to see that happen, right?
I knew there was no stopping Tommy.
Right.
You know, and Jimmy either.
Mm-hmm.
Because
the De Niro character for those.
You know, because there was a whole lot more involved than go get your shine.
Yeah, it was a long, long, long history between them.
Exactly, and...
So basically, all you could do is lock the door, make sure no one else came in while the murder took place.
Yeah, we had to get rid of all the customers in the place, and it was 4 in the morning. Well, we used to stay open like 24 hours in Vegas. But, I knew, and Jimmy says, pull a car around the front, you know, make sure you're right in front of the, you know. So, I mean, the handwriting was on the wall,
You knew it was going to happen. There's no point you trying to get involved at that point. Did you know Billy Batts for a long time before this particular evening?
Not really. I mean, he was a Gambino, and he was a made guy. I had seen him. He used to come in my club all the time.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. You're not allowed to kill a made guy unless you get permission from somebody higher up, and that was where Tommy made his mistake, right?
Not really. See, Jimmy Burke's crew, which was Tommy, me, and all the other guys.
Okay.
I mean,
that's the Pesci character, the De Niro character, and you.
Yeah,
okay.
And there was a whole bunch of other guys involved, a lot of Westies, guys from Hell's Kitchen. But we could just about do anything. I mean, because we had a count to Paulie, but Paulie was, powerful enough that no matter what we did,
He could make it okay with the higher ups. So Jimmy, it was okay for Jimmy to kill this guy? Because if it was okay, then how come Jimmy killed him and you guys buried him out in the middle of nowhere and never wanted anybody to find his body?
Not in the middle of nowhere. We buried it on a friend of ours, horse. I mean, not horse.
Right, but no one. The objective was for no one to find him. He just disappeared.
I mean, yeah, he vanished.
And then when Paul asked you about it, you said you didn't know anything about it.
Not only he asked me, every Gambino soldier, you know, try to pick
what happened to Billy Bats. And
well,
you all
we know
said
that he was here. That he left. You know, yeah. Well, I know what happened to him. He ran away.
He was in a sheet, but don't worry about it.
No, he ran away with his new girlfriend. They're in the Virgin Islands or somewhere living.
So you take this guy out. You guys, you stuff him in the trunk. You take him out nowhere. You find out when you open the trunk, he's still alive. The Joe Pesci character, Tommy, in real life, finishes him off with a knife, real grisly. You bury him, and then you have to move him, right?
Dig him up, yeah, because the property that we buried him on, this big bookmaker's property, he had a German Shepherd ranch. You know, he used to raise shepherds, and he had sold it. And he says, you know, I just sold my place. We was at a restaurant one night, and Ralph says to Jimmy, you know, I sold my property in Connecticut, they're going to build condos on it. In fact, the bulldozers are up there.
Uh-oh. That's not a good thing.
And it was in December when we buried the guy, so he was, you know, only a couple of feet down.
Right.
They were going to find us.
So you had to dig him up.
Got to dig him up again.
Did you really get as sick as a Ray Liotta character did in the movie? I mean, that has to be awful.
I was very sick.
And you dug him up, and where'd you put him then? Somewhere.
In the basement of Robert's Lounge.
Really? No.
Yeah, with a sack of lime this time. We had no lime the first time we buried.
Well, you ought to plan better. You know, you ought to bring lime if you guys are going to be killing these people. We're speaking with Henry Hill. The movie Goodfellas is based on his life. So the second time you had the lime, you prepared, you buried him in somebody's basement. Hey, where's Jimmy Hoffa? Any idea?
Yeah, no, under the goalpost.
That's what they say. I just figured I'd get the real scoop.
I have no clue. It's a
real
shame.
Scoop, buddy. So you moved the guy, but now had the bulldozers found Billy Bats on this property, what would have happened? I mean, obviously he would have been dead. I guess they never planned to find Tony Spilotro either. He was found. So if that happens,
well, the feds would have come in because we crossed the state line. And
federal thing. It's not about Paul. It's not about the upper boss. It's about the feds getting involved because now there's a body.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. The feds wouldn't care if you killed a dozen of those guys.
Right, but now they get involved.
The attaboys.
Start nosing around in your business. That's interesting. Now, your wife, Karen, is portrayed in the movie by Lorraine Bracco, who's beautiful, still beautiful. Beautiful back then. Was your wife, Karen, as pretty as Lorraine Bracco?
Very much so.
So how come you're out screwing around on her? What's the matter with you? You got steak at home, and you're out going for hamburger.
Every guy that, you know, you had to have a girlfriend. I mean, you know, you just had to, or two girlfriends. You know, I mean, it was just a guy thing. You know, I don't know, maybe the kids are more monogamous today.
I doubt they are. But you always wonder, because it seems like all the mobsters, you know, they, and of course a lot of other people do this too, but, you know, it's pretty widespread. You have the girlfriend, like in the movie, they said Friday night was for the girlfriends, Saturday night was for the wives. Is that true?
Absolutely. At the Culpa, anyway.
But the wives have to know that, right? I mean, if I were a wife, I'd show up on Friday night. It wouldn't take me long to figure it out.
I think that they were, you know, home taking care of the kids, out shopping. I mean,
they don't ask a lot of questions.
We kept them busy.
Yeah.
We kept them busy.
I imagine. So this Janice girl in the movie portrayed. Now who was this girl? This is the girl you were cheating on. He had set up in an apartment or something like that, right?
Yeah.
And whatever happened with her?
She married very well.
Did she? Did she?
The Firestones, actually.
Oh, did she? I had no idea. So your wife was ready to kill this girl.
That
was not a real name.
No, well, Linda. No, Linda was the one that I went out with Linda for 11 years. She passed away a couple of years ago.
Is that the one you got involved with after you got out of prison, who was the druggie? That's the one portrayed in the movie?
No. See, they combined I had two girlfriends.
Busy guy.
With Janice and Linda. And you know, Janice was involved with the drugs. I mean, Linda did, you know, she snorted a little, she took a toot here and there. You know, only on weekends.
So that part of it wasn't, it was kind of a combination of girls. So you had the one girl, then you went into prison, then you got out of prison, and then you hooked up with a girl you had actually met at Janice's place prior to.
Correct.
Okay, and so, now once you get a girlfriend.
She was my sister-in-law's schoolmate. You know, she was a lot younger.
You were a busy guy. So you were married to Karen for 25 years. She didn't kill you. You finally got divorced.
She almost did. She's.
So that scene is true of her with the gun over the top of you in the bed?
I come home after 2 days or 3 days out and passed out. She straddles me, and she got my pistol, and she cocks it back, and get up, get up. She smacked me in the face, and her hands are shaking, and all I can see is the is the copper in the cylinder of the fucking revolver.
That's scary. And that's funny.
Tell me about it.
So she's going to, you know, nothing's worse than a woman with a shaking hand with a gun in your face.
Honest to God, I mean, she, you know, she, you got it. What are you doing? You know, I mean, she was really upset. I think she was quite
well, I think she was probably upset. Well, I can understand why she was upset.
Why?
Well, you know, Henry Hill, mobster.
Why?
I can understand why she was
upset. Everybody else did it. I mean, well, I couldn't do it.
But you had to love that. But you had to love that about her, because one of the reasons you married her is because she was fiery to begin with, right?
She was very smart.
A bunch of books you've written and other people have written about you. Talk about those for a second.
Well, I've personally written 4 books. My latest book is Gangsters and Goodfellas, Life in a Witness Protection Program. It's out there in all the stores. All my books are in the store. I wrote a cookbook. I'm working on The Untold Stories of Henry Hill now. Also, Wise Guy, Nick Pledge, wrote that, you know.
Wise Guy, Nick Pledge wrote that about you, right? The movie was based on that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And, I wrote The Good Father Guide to New York. It's a fun, I mean, if you want to go, like, on a mob tour.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
We're having a mob tour.
They have one here, yeah. Absolutely.
You know,
that's a,
I mean,
yeah.
It's, you know, it's a lot of trivia, a lot of.
Oh, sure.
I mean, it's a fun book.
That is interesting. Now, you actually wrote a cookbook based on some of the experiences in jail?
No, it was actually all my sister's recipes. My mother was born in Sicily, you know, and it's an Italian cookbook, and it's all original recipes, very simple, quick to make, and fantastic and delicious.
Now, talk about the time you actually did do a term in jail because you roughed up a guy, the wrong guy. Yeah, let's talk about the first time, because you roughed up a guy, and sadly his sister had some connections that weren't good for you.
She worked for the FBI.
That's not ever a good thing, to rough up the brother of a girl who works for the FBI.
I mean, he was a bookmaker. Didn't pay Casey, the head of the union. That we had went to Florida that weekend to I was going to be a business agent in the at Disney World. So I had to get the okay from Santos Traficante. And anyway, but while we were there, you know, he said, this guy owes me $14,000.
While you're there, why don't you beat up a guy? You know,
well,
go to Disneyland, beat up a guy.
Something like that.
Something could put part of the trip, but just
anyway,
a business trip.
Well, can
you write that off as a business trip if you beat up a guy while you're down there on vacation?
Well, the union paid for it anyway. So it
all right, okay, doesn't matter then. Okay, I'm just as if you file taxes, right?
Paid for it.
Okay, so you rough up the guy,
yeah.
And his sister worked for the FBI, so you
she
didn't get
clerk.
Away with it. Okay,
and when he went home with 38 stitches in his head, the sister got curious.
So why did he rat though? I mean, isn't he a rat for? Don't they usually just keep their mouths shut when they get roughed up because they know it could be worse for them if they tell anyone?
Of course, but he had, I guess he told his sister, you know, well, he was a bookmaker, come on.
She
sure
knew. Yeah.
I mean, he owned a bar, a big bar in Tampa, and it was, it's not rocket science.
Yeah,
you come home with, you know, all binged up.
So how long were you in prison? Did you actually serve?
10 years, I got 10 years.
And you got out early, though? And you got out early?
Well, a few months early.
Yeah.
And, you know, then we... Then we jump to Lufthansa and blah blah blah.
Yeah. So before the Lufthansa theft, let's talk about the prison. How was prison life? Was it worse than you imagined?
Not for us guys. You know, we lived in honor dorms. We had just about everything that we wanted. You know, as long as we had the money.
Because you were paying off all the guards and everybody.
Yeah, the hacks. Yeah, I mean back in those days, you could get away with that stuff. I don't know if it goes on today. I have no clue. I haven't been in prison in a long time. Thank God. And I'm sure it's, to some extent it goes on, but we had a lot of money and we were treated a lot differently in prison. You know, no one messed with us, and we did. We cooked, and you know, I mean, that was all true.
There's a lot to be said for that. It's a better way of living if you have. So you get out of prison and you pull off the Lufthansa. Talk about that for a second for those who did not see.
Yeah, well, you know, we that was our first big score. You know, when we got out of prison, and it was very successful.
$6 million.
It was a little more than that, but $6 million in cash and plus a few million in diamonds and rubies and sapphire rubies.
Wow!
Yeah, I mean, it was a good score. It was a score of a lifetime for everybody. But Jimmy and Paulie got nuts. You know what I mean? And well, some of the guys that actually, you know, I put the score together. Me, Jimmy, and Marty. You know, Maury in the movie, But Jimmy got really paranoid, and he started whacking everybody.
Because people were buying, you know, furs for their wives. And who's the guy who bought the pink Cadillac?
Johnny Rosebeef.
And is it true that he got killed in the pink Cadillac with his wife?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there was another woman killed too, Teresa Ferraro, but it's another story.
Who killed them?
I have no idea. I didn't.
You lose track after a few of those, right?
I mean, you know, he was, they killed Starks first, Tommy kills him. I mean, you know, that world is so sick and so insane and so violent, you know, and vicious. You can't trust your best friend because he's going to come and whack you. You know, and that's the way it was.
Yeah.
I mean, that's that life. You know, it's so abnormal. I mean, so so different than reality. It's completely opposite of the real world. You know, the world of organized crime. I mean, it's really, you know, it's a terrible way to live. And I don't recommend it to any youngster out there, or even old guy out there. You know, if you're in, get out. There's a way to get out, you know. And
how do you get out? Other than going to the Witness Protection Program, and we'll talk about that in a minute, why you chose to do that. Is there a way to get out? I mean, you got in, you thought it was exciting, it was this and that. Is it possible to go straight at some period of time without ratting your friends out?
Well, I tried it. I joined the Army. I joined the 82nd Airborne when I was 17. I figured, let me get away from these people. One of my sisters made me come live with her on Long Island, you know, to get out of the city. That lifestyle is so intoxicating. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could have put me in the...
Egypt.
Yeah,
I know where you're going. Okay.
You know, and I would eventually run my way home.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, the life was just... You couldn't...
So you took the good with the bad. There was some bad, obviously, but the good overwhelmed you.
Exactly.
The intrigue, the money, the excitement, all that kind of stuff was much better than the bad times.
It's an intoxicating lifestyle.
Yeah, you have.
I mean, it's a sick, very sick lifestyle. I mean, you hustle from morning till the next morning.
Right.
You know, and you do a lot of horrible things. I did a lot of horrible things in my life. You know, I mean, you know that I'm very ashamed of today. You know, and but you know, I've changed my life. You know, I learned how to paint. I became an artist.
We'll talk about the Witness Protection Program. I'm going to go back to something about the lifestyle. When you get married and you're a mobster, and, you know, when you first met your wife, Karen, she did not know what you did for a living.
Absolutely not.
How soon? I mean, come on. The diamonds in the fur start showing up, the fancy house. You know, it doesn't take long for the wife to figure out that the husband's not working at a bank 9 to 5, all right? So at that point, the women do the same thing you do. They compromise. They say, my husband is doing some shady things at night, but you know what? I'm going to overlook that because I'm getting all these goodies. So they start to get into, so they can't complain too much about the downside of you out partying all night long because look how they're living, right?
Well, who's that taking care of business?
Right.
We weren't partying.
Yeah, but my with other chicks and stuff. But my point is that they're deciding that the good outweighs the bad.
Part of that whole. That whole lifestyle, and the only people that they associate with is other wise guys' wives.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's not like, I mean, you can go into a cop bar, nothing but cops
right.
and their wives, or their girlfriends on certain nights.
Right. I mean,
they're no better, right?
Yeah. Now, what about the wives? Do mob wives ever leave their husbands? And, I mean, are there ever divorces, and do they ever kill these women rather than risk them saying anything to the cops, or do the women just go away quietly, get the child support, and keep their mouths shut? I mean, that's got to happen, that they get disgusted and leave.
Yeah, but not really. I mean, you know, they attempt it, you know, I mean... My wife knew I was cheating. Come on.
Of course she knew. And she just didn't care.
Yeah, she put up with it.
He's a big boy. He knows what he said. What'd you say?
You're right.
Funny how?
You know, you're funny.
You mean, so, man, let me understand this. Cause I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown? I amuse you?
That was Joe Pesci in the Goodfellas movie. Now, tell me how that happened. I did not realize, Henry Hill, that's kind of an interesting story behind that scene.
Actually, Joe Pesci, when he first started out in acting, was the waiter in in Harlem, and he actually seen that scene happen, and he had lived it. I mean, no one knew that he was going to do it.
So that was not in the script.
That was not in the script, and that was spur of the moment thing, and they were filming, and Marty says, keep filming, and they did the scene in one take.
So Martin Scorsese just was smart enough to see this was brilliant. Yeah, and it was great stuff. And Ray Liotta, of course, who played you in the movie, he reacted very interestingly to it.
He didn't know what was going on.
That's interesting. You know, next time I watch Good...
We discussed it.
You discussed it with him? And what did he say to you?
I mean, he had no idea, Joe Pesci, knew that he was going to do it, but no one else knew it.
Well, that's the smart thing. Now, what did you think of Ray Liotta's presentation of you, interpretation of you in the Goodfellas movie?
He nailed it. I mean, he was 99.9% there. I mean, he nailed it perfectly. You know, and I don't know if he was doing drugs during the drug part, but...
He plays a good bad guy. He's been in several movies playing a very good bad guy.
He's a great actor. He's a great person. He's a good person, and he's a friend. When the feds played a tape recording, after 11, though, my partners were whacked, and they played a tape recording that I was going to get whacked. Or that Jimmy got the okay from Paulie. I mean, this was on tape, and they played it for me in my dining room at my home. And I says, well, I think it's about time.
So they got the okay to kill you at that point.
Yeah.
They had discussed it, and it was decided. And yeah. Once it's decided, nobody goes back on it, right, Henry?
No, I mean, it's a done deal.
Now, why did they kill everybody who was involved in the Lufthansa? Was it because of the fact that they all wanted to keep their share of the money, or they were afraid they were going to talk, or?
Greed, stupidity on their parts, you know, bugging Jimmy for their end of the money, you know, because Jimmy and Paulie were controlling the money.
So they were coming after you after the big lick went on? That's when they, you found out that you were one of the people on the list?
Yeah, it was after they killed all these other guys. And then I got arrested for drugs. And they had a lot of recordings. They had a lot of tape recordings where Jimmy was involved in the drug business. Paulie's son was involved in the drug business. And, and all the stuff would have come out in the 3500 material, which, from the investigations that they were investigating me. And it was all on tape. And, it was just all what it came out.
So at that point, you really didn't have a choice. There's a scene in there where your wife is dealing with Jimmy, a Robert De Niro character, and they send her down the street, and she gets to an alley to look at furs or something, and then she backs up, and she says, uh-oh. She gets a bad feeling.
I was supposed to meet Jimmy that day, so she went in my place to tell Jimmy that I couldn't make it. Something came up.
Uh-huh.
And that she was alert. I mean, we knew at that point that, I mean, the feds hadn't played the tape for me, but I said, just be alert because, something's coming down. I don't know what it is, but I know the way this guy thinks. I mean, the handwriting was on the wall.
Right. So she was pretty shook up when she got down there and had that close call with Jimmy.
Absolutely.
He would have had her killed in that alley if she'd gone down that corner.
Well, he would have held her there until, until I showed up, then he would have whacked the two of us.
Now, what is
and
it like?
He would have put my kids in the refrigerator to get to me at that point.
Oh, my gosh. Do they do that? Does it happen with children very often? You don't hear those stories. Does that happen?
Well, yes. I mean, come on. It's not supposed to happen with Italians, Yeah, the Colombians is okay for them to do it, and the blacks is okay for them to do it. But we're supposed to have a code. There's no code. And you think people respect you in that lifestyle. They fear you. Mm-hmm. And it's so sad, it is. I mean, because you think you got respect, you don't got respect.
Yeah.
And they don't want to cross you or offend you in any way.
Right, no question. Now, so when you got the witness protection program, how long were you in there? Because you got basically kicked out eventually, right? Because you weren't kind of playing by the rules. How shocking, Henry Hill. You weren't playing by the rules. I'm so shocked. After a lifetime of organized crime, you suddenly don't want to play by the rules.
I messed up quite a few times. They did a great job. The witness protection people, they put the life on line for me. The FBI put the life on line for me. I'm still friends with a lot of agents and marshals. They're great people. They protect you. Anybody out there has got a problem and doesn't know how to get out of it, contact your local office, believe me.
Interesting. Now, how old were your kids when you went to witness protection?
They were tots, preteens.
Preteens. So now they had to go with you. How was life for them?
Quite difficult. I mean, we moved a dozen times, and... and they had it, different names three different names. I mean, it was difficult for them. Myself, I was flying back and forth to New York. And
you were still doing a lot of testifying at that point.
Yeah. I mean, for 7 years. And, for them, they lived a normal life, and they turned out to be normal adults.
You said your son's a lawyer now in New York.
I have a son's a lawyer. I have a daughter that's very successful. I have a little tot in college. 19-year-old.
So they managed to come through it. Now, when you were in the witness protection program, they had to travel with you to a certain extent. While you were going back and forth testifying, obviously your life was very much in danger at that point, right?
But I always had either marshals or FBI agents, or there was always people with me.
Is your life in danger now?
Absolutely not. All those people are dead from my past. I don't look over my shoulder. I don't go where I'm not supposed to go, and And if you know, if someone is heard on a wiretap, you know, talking about me, I'm immediately notified by the feds.
Oh, I see. They're watching that kind of thing
the
time.
Oh, yeah. I have a handler and blah, blah.
But you get to a certain point in your life and they're just not going to care. Because I've talked to Frank Collada about that, too, who went into the witness protection program. He told me the same thing. There's nothing they're going to get from me at this point. There's no point. Because when you're killing somebody, generally you're killing somebody to prevent them from talking, right? More so than revenge. Is that generally why you whack somebody?
Of course. I mean, you know, once you testify and, you know, and the appeals run out,
What can they do for them? Yeah, so they wouldn't just
There's
try
no
to
point. I mean, you know, unless you catch some crazy loose horse, you know, wants to make a reputation for himself. But that, I mean, people cherish their lives these days. I mean, even they've went underground. You know, the mobsters that's still alive today.
Mm-hmm.
They're not. You know, no more John Gotti's out there.